This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And it's time to fire it up. I'm David Gao, the boss. I'm sitting next to the Gloss, our Monday night delight, Carla Dawson.
This fancy new equipment in front of me. We have a little Christmas over the weekend.
Well, nothing but the best for the Gloss. We're trying to get gear here in the studio that matches your whole outfit.
I noticed you bedazzled my mic. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It is slick and looking better. You've never looked better. Ron Culver behind the glass, you have looked better. You had a busy weekend. You were in San Antonio.
Tell us what San Antonio did to you, Ron.
I actually had an absolute blast. That was a lot of fun.
I'll bet you did. Not everybody gets to go to a Final Four in San Antonio, which makes it it's a very big night for the state of Texas. We've got Championship Monday taking place in San Antonio, the great matchup, and this will unfold later. We will keep you up to date as the game progresses.
The Double Dubs, Wildcats versus the Wolverines.
I like your title.
I love that. That's my self-proclaimed.
The Double Dubs.
Title of the matchup, Double Dubs.
And then here in Houston, we are celebrating the unveiling of the championship banner, the Astros, tonight at Minute Maid Park. But that didn't go so well, the unveiling of the banner, did it?
It was an attempted unveiling. But it got a lot of laughter. It was good.
If you have not seen it, I encourage you to go to YouTube or wherever you can to see the struggle to unveil the championship banner. It took three guys to run up there.
And a few leaf blowers.
They put leaf blowers. One guy had sort of a rake device or some kind of device to pull it down. Another man ran up a ladder. It was not hard to get the covering off of the banner. It was not easy, I should say. It was really, really big struggle. But in the end, the banner was unveiled, and it is official. There is now a championship banner hanging at Minute Maid Park in honor of the Astros season last year.
And we now know it's much easier for the Astros to actually win a World Series than to unveil the banner.
Well, maybe so.
So just win one more, and then we'll have that banner thing down for 2018.
It was not easy, though, that victory. I tell you, that World Series last year, in this city of Houston, I was at a lunch the other day where everyone was replaying the series over the Red Sox, the series over the Yankees, the series over the Dodgers. A great night to celebrate, a great night for Houston, and a great night in San Antonio, where we will talk soon, later this hour, with Lee Allen Klein about the big matchup in San Antonio, the Championship Monday. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is Nate and Crate on SB Nation Radio. Here's your hosts, Nate Griffin and Patrick Creighton. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, we can give Ron a little grief for introducing us as Nate and Crate, can we not?
Who are you going to be?
Well, that's
Hollywood. You're already Nate.
That's the
I'll
real question.
I'm got feisty. Crate.
You're feisty.
Yep.
Okay.
So there we go.
Well, let me just say the Gloss is no Crate. There's no comparison beyond that. But let's talk a little NBA. They were talking some NBA today. And Nate and Crate, by the way, host a show here on our Houston station and do a great job with it. But we are not Nate and Crate. We are the Boston Gloss. We are David and Carla. Let's talk a little NBA. We're going to have a chance next segment to visit with Lee Allen Klein about the big matchup in San Antonio tonight. But let's talk some NBA before we get there. We are now finally getting to the end of the season. And the picture looks pretty clear. In fact, it's sort of interesting right now in the West, where everybody envisions the champion will come from. You've got the Rockets and the Warriors. And Las Vegas has come out today and said that they think the odds for the Rockets and the Warriors are dead even. If you put up $100 on one of those two teams and they win the championship, you get $120 back. But they're dead even. They now see those teams as tightly locked. That's the first time in a long time the Warriors have not been the favorite.
I agree with that, actually. I mean, who's going to bet against Las Vegas? But nonetheless, I can absolutely see that. Because with the Warriors, you know, the Warriors up until this last month or 6 weeks when they had four of their five starters out.
Yep.
Steph with a grade two MCL sprain and the ankle issue. Klay with the wrist. Kevin Durant with the ribs. Draymond Green with the thigh contusion. All of this business. Four out of their five starters, which leaves Zaza Pachulia as their only starter. And don't get me started on that. So I think that is what really has evened the playing field some. And then you have Houston, who has been on three double-digit winning streaks this season, which has been unbelievable. And they're really peaking, and they're so deep that I think the experience that Houston lacks with this roster in the postseason and going deep into the postseason and definitely in the championship rounds makes up for in health and depth, where the Warriors have such experience, having gone to the championship all three of the last years, winning two of them. You know, that experience, that depth will really matter. That will help erase what's kind of going on in the injuries. But it really all comes down to Steph Curry for the Warriors and how far they can take that, I think.
Obviously, the Warriors looking to get healthy. It is interesting, this week, D'Antoni of the Rockets came out and said that he really would prefer to keep his team in rhythm than give them rest. And the conventional wisdom right now is late in the year, if you've locked up your spot in the playoffs, you just need to give your team rest, get them rested, and get their legs underneath them for the big final run in the playoffs. Do you agree with D'Antoni?
I do with his situation and his roster, because he's really able to, because of the addition of Chris Paul, he's able to manage James Harden's minutes. He's not playing like he did last year, you know, 38, 40 minutes a game. He's can be in the 20s and the 30s. And because there's so, you know, Eric Gordon can come in for Harden. And Chris Paul's been on the bench quite a bit, you know, resting this hamstring issue over the last month. And it's okay because he's older. He's saving it. You know, he's not 100%. He can do this. I think he's absolutely right that the rhythm is the best thing to do, because he doesn't have to rest these players because nobody's played LeBron type minutes. Nobody's been overplayed because of injuries. They've been at different times.
See, I liken it to the final preseason game of an NFL season, where you want to play your starters for at least a quarter in that preseason game, but you also want to rest them. You don't want to get them banged up. You don't want to risk injury right before the regular season starts. So I do want to get these guys on the court and in a rhythm to some degree. There's some balance between rest and rhythm.
Absolutely. You want to keep that chemistry going. You know, unfortunately for Golden State, they would rather have the rest because they've had such a weird year with injuries, you know, and Steph missing an incredible amount of time, that Durant's really had to push up his minutes with Klay out. You know, Draymond's had to push up his minutes. So last year, if you remember, Kevin Durant missed about 7 weeks with the same type of knee sprain that Steph Curry has. Look what it translated to in the finals.
All right, staying in the West, is it the Rockets, the Warriors, and just about nobody else? I mean, can you look at a Portland or a San Antonio and say they have the capacity to upset the Rockets or the Warriors?
I don't think it's likely, but yes. And you did name the two teams, I think, in the Western Conference that have the ability to do that. I think the Thunder have the talent, but they don't play as well as a team, and they're streaky. But Portland has really come along nicely. They seem to be peaking at the right time. And with Damian Lillard and P.J. McCollum, I mean, they're, wow. It's a really dynamic duo. Now, they do lack experience going deep into the playoffs. They were outed in the first round against Golden State last year. And the Spurs, weirdly, you can't ever count them out. I mean, a month ago, we're just laughing at their, you know, lack of ability to do anything. And here they are on this, you know, beat the Rockets last night by 20-something points. And they're looking good. I mean, this is the time you want to start picking it back up.
Don't underestimate Popovich.
No, never.
Let's look at the East for a minute. Everyone's envisioning a Celtics-Cavaliers Eastern Conference championship. Is that inevitable, or will Toronto come in and mess up that scenario?
It's so hard. I mean, I feel badly for Toronto. They are first place in the Eastern Conference by 2.5 games over Boston, and then the Cavaliers are in third. I feel like they are such a bridesmaid. Like, nobody's talking about
them.
Not
at all.
They've got superstars in DeMar DeRozan and, you know, Kyle Lowry. I mean, they're fun to watch. But I don't know if it's because they're tucked up away in Canada. I don't know what the deal is. But they are the real deal. Yet, everybody wants to see a healthy Kyrie against LeBron.
And that's where we're headed. Kyrie's going to be back, and then it will be LeBron and Kyrie. Many are saying LeBron would just not stand to lose to Kyrie, particularly after all that went down and Kyrie demanded his way out of Cleveland.
Oh, my goodness. He would never be able to live that one down. That would be terrible for
Celtics
him.
Right now are actually looking pretty impressive in this regard. They have played very well in Kyrie's absence. And some are saying Brad Stevens deserves consideration for Coach of the Year. When you think about the whole season of the Celtics, when you think about how it began right on opening night, there's Gordon Hayward, one of their big three. It was going to be Hayward, Horford, two key cogs to go along with Kyrie Irving. Hayward goes down. And that forced Stevens to play the young guys, to play Jason Tatum, the rookie, Jaylen Brown, the second-year player. Yet they did very, very well. They're only two games behind the number one seed in the East. And then this last month, Kyrie Irving is injured. He goes off to get his surgery. And the Celtics played very well and closed the gap with Toronto. They've gone a six-game win streak. Brad Stevens deserves a lot of credit.
He really deserves a lot of credit. I do think as well as Boston is playing, they are a better team with Kyrie, the best ISO player to me in the entire NBA. And what a great ability to get Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum all these minutes and all this time without Kyrie. It's really impressive, and it shows kind of the heart of Boston, and that comes from the top down. That comes from Brad Stevens, getting these guys not to give up, not to give in at this point with their star player out.
So we only have about a minute and a half left, but the NBA has come out with its 2018 Hall of Fame selections. There's some really, really good names on that list, yet there are a name or two that you wish could have been on that list.
Yeah, really. I mean, the ones that I love, there's like 13 new inductees, but Steve Nash.
Love Steve Nash.
I mean, he changed the point guard position to what it is today, honestly. Jason Kidd.
Yep.
Grant Hill, 7-time All-Star. Ray Allen, love it, 2-time MVP champ. Probably the most prolific three-point shooter in the league. Maurice Cheeks, one of the best defensive point guards. And just that just highlights some of the lineup. But I have to say,
no one could dispute those names. No. They are certain Hall of Famers.
Tina Thompson from the WNBA.
You bet.
And she was there right at the beginning, and what a superstar. But I have to say, we are based in Houston. I'm going to go ahead and give that caveat. But Rudy Tomjanovich has been a finalist for 2 years. This will be the third. And snubbed again. He was a coach and a player. And he was so innovative and ahead of his time. You know, how he utilized Akeem's skills. And he had his team relying on threes long before that was the sexy thing to do in the NBA.
They perfected that inside-outside game so well. They'd go down low to Akeem, which would draw the double team, and Akeem would make a good outlet pass to somebody who was open and available to shoot the three.
And he really used Akeem's skills in a way that made him just a transcendent player. No one has ever been like him. And Rudy T, listen to this. This is incredible to me. He's the only active, non-active NBA head coach to win multiple championships and not be in the Hall of Fame.
All right, well, there's still hope for Rudy T. I wanted to give you a chance to give your plug for him. When we come back, we're going to get to talk to Lee Allen Klein. We're going to talk to him about all things NCAA March Madness and the big game tonight, Championship Monday. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on SB Nation Radio, Lee Allen Klein. He's a consultant in sports and media. And he's the executive producer and host of That Bracket Show on SB Nation Radio. Lee Allen, welcome to SB Nation Radio. Lee Allen, are you there? Joining us now is Lee Allen Klein. Lee, are you on the phone?
Greetings from the Alamo Dome.
Great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, you are at the epicenter of all things sports, Championship Monday, and what I think is going to be an exciting matchup. You know, people talk about it as the best team versus the hot team. The great offense versus the great defense. How do you see the game unfolding?
I see history here. I see a Villanova team and Jay Wright position themselves for a second national title in 3 years with doing it on both ends of the court. An incredible offensive team, best in defensive efficiency, and an underrated defensive team. And I think the best thing maybe of the whole thing is you've got five guys that have really bought into the culture of what Villanova basketball is, and it starts with their point guard, the National Player of the Year, Jalen Brunson, who's just been absolutely dynamic and dominating all season long.
No, you're so right about that, about Brunson. I was going to ask you, so Brunson, AP Player of the Year, he can post up as a point guard, he draws multiple defenders. So Xavier Simpson tonight is going to be going up against Jalen Brunson. How are you going to coach Xavier in this matchup if you're Jim Beilein?
Deny him the ball. Don't let him touch the ball. Force the offense for Villanova to run through somebody else. And if that means expend Xavier Simpson, who offensively is a liability, mm-hmm. if that means to wear him out, use him just for on the defensive end, it's a worthwhile, it's an opportunity you have to take, because the reality is that Jalen Brunson, he controls the tempo, he controls the spacing. Mm-hmm. We saw when Kansas got into striking distance and it's Jalen Brunson time. Boom, hits a shot, hits another. He's just a killer on the court. And so if they can deny Brunson the ball, force someone else to run Villanova's offense, try to be a little disruptive, maybe, and got to mix up the defense. And then offensively, they've got to do some really interesting things that I'm sure we'll get to. But to me, you got to get the ball out of Brunson's hand by any way possible. And that means maybe multiple people. And then ultimately, you're going to see Simmons and Poole come in to change it up and try to get other defenders on them.
And, you know, that's a great point about having to change things up. And because, you know, Saturday against Loyola of Chicago, Xavier Simpson had 0 points and 4 turnovers, yet they were still able to pull it out. But that's against an 11 seed. And now you're talking about a totally different deal and a very complete team with Villanova. Can Michigan pull it off if Xavier Simpson has a night like that again? Can they pull in Mo Wagner and Duncan Robinson and cover up for maybe what might be lacking with Simpson?
We're going to find that out here pretty quick, but what I would say is this. We've seen now 5 tournament games out of Michigan. One of those 5, they could win. If that was Villanova, the game against A&M, didn't matter who they were playing, Michigan's going to win that night because they were just so dynamic offensively. But the other 4 times, they lose to Villanova. So on the other end, Villanova, they were really good offensively against West Virginia. They shot 50%. They were really good offensively on Saturday here against Kansas. The one game they struggled with their offense was Texas Tech, but they were able to grind it out and they're as good defensively, though it doesn't get as much credit, and they can find different ways to beat you. They don't have to be on from 3 in order to beat you, because they can win a lot of battles with their spacing. Each guy, they got 5 guys that could score on the court. So for Michigan to win this game, I think it's got to be, 4 guys have to score in double figures. Can't just be Matthews and it can't just be Wagner. It's got to be, you got to have 4 guys contributing. I think they're going to have to score in transition, which is kind of dicey because Villanova really likes to get up and down. But I think for Michigan, they need to be opportunistic and get Wagner the ball in transition in ways that, again, atypical. And I'd also like to see them utilize Wagner in other sets. You can't just post them up here because the defensibility of Spellman and of Pascal isn't Loyola here. You've got to be able to put him. You're going to have to use a screen, have him be, screen the screener action where Wagner sets the initial screen and then is able to peel off another screen. And they got to catch Villanova when they're switching to get smaller guys on Wagner. And that's going to be a recipe that hopefully is going to give him a chance to really compete here.
We're talking to Lee Allen Klein. He is executive producer and host of The Bracket Show on SB Nation Radio. So let's ask you about Jay Wright. He has had a great year. He is standing to win 2 out of 3. Is he somebody now who could challenge Coach K's records? Is that thinking too far ahead?
Well, what you're talking about is the next of the great, you know, Hall of Famers. Now, I know that they've changed the we were here. They honored the Naismith inductees on Saturday, and Lefty Driesell, the famous coach, was in. And he's the next of the great coaches that's going to be inducted in, though they're not going to induct current coaches. But when you have two titles, you're now in a company that very few, that air that very few breathe. And the thing about Jay Wright is his, you know, he's done it in a way, you know, he didn't get the top 20 recruits. He didn't get too many McDonald's guy. Granted, you know, Brunson's a McDonald's guy, but he was able to find a way to get, he played small, probably the first to really successfully go with a four-guard offense, play small, create an identity, find guys that fit a culture compared to the compiling talent. And has been able to really use this recipe to have continued success. We're talking about 29 wins, 4 or 5 years in a row. So I would say consistency. Right now, Jay Wright might be ahead of what Krzyzewski and Duke are doing because he is consistent in having Villanova play at a really high level. And he's the one to catch right now when we talk about the great programs and great coaches in America.
That's exciting for Jay Wright and well-deserved because he's got basically one redshirt freshman in Amari Spellman and everyone else is, you know, juniors and seniors, which is impressive and not what you see at Duke and Kentucky. But aside from the dynamic duo of Bridges and Brunson for Villanova, who do you think tonight is going to have the most impact for the Wildcats?
Well, to me, Amari Spellman, what he... Now, offensively, he's grown leaps and bounds as this year has gone on. And, you know, that's been really interesting to see how well he's shooting the three, as well as what he can do, you know, dynamically. But to me, him and Pascal, defensively, they're the ones that are in the crosshairs and being able to go, you know, how switching the screens and guarding Wagner, preventing Wagner's drives. To me, it's Spellman, Pascal. I think Pascal had the best day. I think it's really about Spellman and his contribution. And one factor that we haven't talked about is the whistle. How is this game going to be called? Because that neither of these teams are really deep. A huge drop off, probably more so when Michigan brings in Testy. They've got Simmons and Poole. They, you know, maybe play eight. Going over, really, same thing. Bring for a couple of minutes. DiVincenzo, who's like a starter as well. And they try to get away a little bit with Cosby Roundtree. But you're talking about these are relatively thin teams that if there's foul trouble, the drop-off starts to become significant. So I think that's the other thing you got to do. So I get back to Spellman. Can he defend without fouling? Will he be offensively dynamic, which is going to take also a Wagner or, you know, a big player away from protecting the rim? That's going to be, I think, the one guy that that I'll put right under the microscope to see and be the difference maker in this game.
So if this game comes down to a battle of free throws, are you liking Villanova in this?
Yeah, well, for free throws, you can definitely get your nerves on the front line. So, especially depending on who they foul. The Villanova, they've just proven to make big plays and hit big shots now time and time again. So, outside of a tournament game against Wisconsin, not many games that they've... Other teams go 4 minutes, 6 minutes, 8 minutes in a scoring drought. You never see that with Villanova. They always seem to find a way to get points. So I think Villanova is the better team. 9 out of 10 times this game gets played, Villanova wins it. But tonight, who knows?
That's Lee Allen Klein. Thank you so much for joining us on SB Nation Radio on Championship Monday. My
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, even though it is the off season, there's no off in the NFL.
Ever.
It is amazing the headlines coming up. You've got big receiver names, guys like OBJ, Dez Bryant, Gronkowski, all of whom could be traded according to the rumor mill that's out there. But OBJ is the one who has really stolen the headlines in the last week. It does appear the Giants are open to trading OBJ.
They really are. They are talking out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, it's so fascinating. Owner, CEO John Mayer said, I want him to be a Giant, but I can't promise that that's going to happen. And, you know, I saw Dave Gettleman, their new general manager, being interviewed at the spring meetings. And when they flat out asked him, will OBJ be a Giant next year? He said, I'm not prepared to answer that right now. I mean, that door is wide open. I think with a talent like OBJ, you'd be crazy not to listen to offers. I mean, it would be fascinating to see what you could get for him.
I might say with the problems that he brings, I'd listen to offers.
Sure.
I'm not sold on him. I just think that he has a personality and a temperament and a presence that could cause problems over time.
Well, I think, you know, he's entering his fourth year in the NFL. The first 3 years, I mean, Hall of Fame, eye-popping numbers.
Yep.
Unbelievable. But last year, he had 90, for the first 3 years, 96 catches, over 1,300 yards receiving, and 12 touchdowns. I mean, that is historic. Those are Hall of Fame-type numbers. Last year, he was hurt in game 3 or 4, you know, with the ankle surgery injury, and we didn't see him for the rest of the season. The issue with Odell, to me, is his professionalism. On the field, remember, like getting in a fight with the net on the sideline, doing the dog urinating, touchdown celebration. And then off the field, we've got, you know, a variety of off-field
that
incidents.
Untoward video that came out with a pizza box and a brown cigarette.
And a woman in bed.
And a woman and some white powder floating around.
Yeah, not a good look.
So do you make a big bet on that? No, I don't think so. Interestingly, I think, for me, the question for the Giants is less about OBJ individually and more, well, here's the fork in the road.
Direction of the franchise.
Yes, the direction of the franchise. Are they going to rebuild? And if so, then you trade OBJ and you draft a quarterback at number 2 and maybe even say, Manning, the best place for you to play, Eli, is somewhere like the Jaguars because you're doing a real rebuild. Or you say, no, we're going to try to win this year. We're going to keep Eli at quarterback. We're going to use the number 2 pick on a player who can help us this year, like a Saquon Barkley, and we're going to bring OBJ back and the pieces that Manning and Barkley and OBJ position us to make a real run. But that's the fork in the road, and OBJ is a fallout of that decision.
No, you're right. And, you know, you are David. Is your last name Gettleman? Because you're sounding like you've got your handle on this.
Send me in.
They need you. But, you know, I'll tell you, to me, this is where I think I agree with you. And this is where I think it's going to be tough for the Giants to cut the cord. Because you look at that roster from top to bottom. Who is the most valuable player on that roster? It's got to be OBJ.
It's certainly OBJ.
Because he elevates Eli Manning.
Well, yes. And I might underscore your point. They don't have a lot of talent. But I think when they signed Nate Solder, that was a signal that we're going after this right. We're putting together a team to win this year. They move Flowers over to right tackle, Solder at left tackle. They fortify the line for Manning. And then I would have thought they'd use the number 2 pick on a talent. Maybe it's Chubb on the defensive side or Barkley on the offensive side. And then OBJ would return.
It's very tricky. I cannot wait to see how this pans out because, you know, John Maris said kind of both things, which, you know what, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to show your hand here. But then you look at, you know, has anyone taken into consideration new head coach Pat Shurmur, who took this job in January? I'm pretty sure he was believing OBJ is going to be my biggest weapon. I mean, you take that knowing what you've got. I don't know how much say he has in the ultimate decision, but he should have something. Because he's looking at it and saying, Odell Beckham is a scoring threat every single time that ball is in his hands. But the key is he has to be on the field to have that ball in your hands.
Sure.
So, but then, you know, then I look at Dave Gettleman, who was also at the spring meetings, as I mentioned, very noncommittal. But look at his history. Look what he did in Carolina, where he came from. He saw that there was going to be a contract issue, just like OBJ is threatening right now with the Giants, with Josh Norman, safety Josh Norman. Boop, doesn't want to deal with it.
ships him off to the Redskins, just released him, just let him go. And did the same thing with wide receiver Steve Smith. So Gettleman is not, he's a no-nonsense guy. He didn't want to deal with this kind of drama. And, you know, Josh Norman is probably the premier, you know, if not one of the premier cornerbacks in the league. And Gettleman was still able to get the Carolina Panthers to the Super Bowl with the absence of Josh Norman.
Okay, rumors are that it might be two number ones, that that would be the price that it would take in order to get OBJ to your team. The Rams, perhaps, the number one team rumored to be of interest. Put OBJ on that offensive side of the ball, and the Rams are just loaded. They got Todd Gurley in the backfield, Jared Goff at quarterback. What would OBJ mean to that offense?
Oh, Sean McVay is not afraid of anything OBJ. He's like, bring it on. He's just got that mentality where he can work with anything, and he sees that talent, and he wants it. So they're going to be willing to give up those kind of picks for him for sure.
Well, they would have an abundance of talent on the offensive side. On the defensive side, they have picked up Tlaib and Peters at the cornerbacks. They've assigned Sue. They got him last week. Their defensive front is strong with Sue and Aaron Donald.
They are loaded. And they were loaded last year.
Yes,
they did need some pieces. But, you know, besides the two first-round draft picks, OBJ's going to want in the neighborhood of $18 to $20 million. And that's a big fat salary. They just had to re-sign Aaron Darnold.
He will chew up a lot of cap space.
He will. But I don't think there's going to be any issue of OBJ finding a home and probably finding it for the dollars that he wants. But you look at John Mara, the head of the Giants. I mean, he put up with a lot of unprofessionalism with Lawrence Taylor, a lot of issues. And why? Because he was a transcendent talent in what he did on the field. So, you know, he's still the CEO. He's still the owner. So we'll see what he says.
All right, word coming out of New England that Gronk is still unhappy and maybe he would be traded. My view of that is that he just wants more money. He's getting paid $9 million annually, and he's looking at guys like Dez Bryant getting paid a whole lot more. He's looking at his impact on the field, and he's saying, I'm not sure I want to come back and play. Isn't it just a money thing?
I think it's a money thing. I'm not losing any stock and any sleep over that if I'm a New England fan.
Okay.
I just am not. I don't think Gronk's going anywhere. And I don't think Belichick is going to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Belichick knows what he's got, and he developed that system with Gronk as a tight end. So
Belichick's not saying anything about this.
I'll be darned. Does he say anything about anything?
No.
I mean, as annoying as it is to us, you know, in the media, you got to credit New England's culture. They keep things in the vault over there.
Yeah. What happened to the locker room stays in the locker room.
We still don't know why Malcolm Butler was benched. Malcolm Butler still doesn't know why he was benched. Now that he's with the Titans and he's talking, came out this week and said, I have no idea. I still don't know.
All right, so if Belichick is quiet, one guy who was not quiet was Jim Moore, former coach of UCLA, talking about his former quarterback, Josh Rosen. And he was pretty forthcoming. He said, look, I think that the Browns ought to pick Sam Darnold. And that's amazing for a number of dimensions. One is he coached Josh Rosen.
And recruited him.
And recruited Josh Rosen and had Josh Rosen with him in UCLA. And, of course, Darnold played for the rival, USC. And yet he's saying almost countervailing things. He said, oh, I think Sam Darnold should go number one to the Browns. But then he came back and he said, well, I think Josh Rosen's the best quarterback in this draft. What do you make of Moore's comments about Josh Rosen?
I find him actually really refreshing.
Mm.
Honestly, I think that Jim Mora is being brutally honest, and I think he is right. I'm going to say that I think as far as skills go and a prototype, accuracy, precision, you know, football sense, I mean, the chosen Rosen has got it all. He does. But what he doesn't have, and Sam Darnold does, and Sam Darnold is raw. He is I'll put you on my shoulders, we got this mentality. He is unflappable. He is a bit of a cow on ice. We kind of heard that saying one time on the show. I thought that was great. Anyway, he's raw, but the difference is this. It's coachability. And I think that's what Jim Mora is saying by not saying. Josh Rosen knows everything. Did you not know that? And he doesn't want to be told what to do. He's very smart. He's a very privileged kid. He's a bit of an elitist. He's a bit polarizing in the locker room. He's not super likable because he's not coachable. That's tough. Sam Darnold, he is just unflappable, super coachable. I would rather have someone like that who's doesn't have quite the skills of Rosen, but is willing to be developed, willing to learn. I think that's what Jim Mora is basically getting at.
What's interesting to me is when the season was ending, there was this almost certainty that it was either going to be Darnold or Rosen, mm-hmm. number one. Now, you look at every mock draft, Rosen is not number one anywhere. He's probably number three in most people's mock drafts. But the debate about number one comes down to Sam Darnold or Josh Allen. But Josh Rosen, he's dropped.
Well, I think that has to do, too, with, you know, after the combine and some of the scouting directors, like these are a few comments. One of them, both of these are from the AFC. One of them said, you know, got a ton of ability, but a ton of issues like dedication. Hmm. I mean, if you're going to think you're drafting your franchise and you're leader of your team, you want dedication to be an issue. Another one says he's got the size, he's got the tools, he's got the velocity, but, you know, his issues off the field, he's got to grow up, and he's really injury prone. He was really injury prone at UCLA. So, and I know that Jim Mora, all 3 years that he coached Rosen, there were several incidents, you know, setting up a portable hot tub in his room at UCLA. They seem silly, but they're a distraction.
Right.
And it's not really a leader type thing. I mean, going into a neighbor's yard and rearranging their yard toys in sexual positions or their yard decorations, wearing an F Trump hat on a Trump golf course and posting it on Instagram. And so these are just this kind of like Baker Mayfield type of immaturity issues.
But he has a different style than Baker. With Baker,
totally different.
It's sort of this
it's
is what
anger
you should,
motivated.
Well, yeah, Baker is sort of this is what you should expect of me. I'm sort of outrageous and I do these things. With Josh, he's a little more understated, but it's happening nonetheless.
I think, you know, you look at Sam Darnold has an underdog mentality.
Yep.
And that's where he does best. And Rosen has a privileged mm-hmm. mentality. It's mm-hmm. just very, very different. And he's a smart kid. I'm not going to take that away from him. But Mora has tried to coach him as far as life goes and has said to him, do you want to be Manziel or do you want to be Manning? Mm. And that's what I want you to think about during your career. And Josh Rosen really never listened to him. So I think that Mora is being brutally honest, or he likes Rosen so much, he doesn't want him to go to Cleveland, so he's talking him down, so he's not the number one ticket.
Right.
You can always look at it that way, too.
I don't think that's the case.
I don't either.
There, yes.
I'm going with he's brutally honest, and I've followed this, you know, relationship between Mora and Rosen, and I think exactly what he's saying is true to how he's been over the past couple years with him.
So as we sit today, Darnold probably goes to Cleveland number one. The Giants are up. They're either going to take a position player or probably Josh Rosen. If not them, then we've got the Jets, and the Jets will probably – Rosen is likely to land in New York.
He probably will, which will be – it's like having Johnny Manziel in New York or Baker Mayfield. That's a lot of distractions mm-hmm. for kind of immature type of guys that are bigger than life or mm-hmm. bigger think that they're bigger than life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be another challenge.
Baker Mayfield likely goes, well, the Broncos might want him. We'll see, but I think he's going to – laying in the top. I mean, we will likely see four quarterbacks go in the top five or six picks of the draft.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be a very exciting day.
And the funny thing is, honestly, where should they really go? Probably in the low 20s or the mid 20s.
Right. Well, everybody reaches for a quarterback.
Right. Right. But as far as actual talent, you know, a year ago at this time, we were saying wait till the 2018 class.
Yep.
These guys, and I think all four of the quarterbacks we're talking about in Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, you can even add Jackson in this as well.
And I'm going to throw in Mason Rudolph.
Yes, you love
he
Mason Rudolph.
He possibly could find his way into that first round.
The only reason I'm not putting Mason in this, because I'm saying the rest of these guys, I think their stock dropped this season.
Yeah.
You know, we were so high on them last year at this time.
Yep.
And all of them, including, you know, my alma mater, you know, Sam Darnold, my guy, I thought he really took a step back this season. Or defense has figured him out and he just wasn't able to adjust. And he will. He's coachable. He just needs more time. So I do think it's interesting, as excited as we all are, there's a large number of quarterbacks. I don't know that the talent is transcendent.
All right, you heard it. Quantity over quality. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So it is fun to be here on Championship Monday. Usually we talk about the Monday Night Delight, but tonight we're talking about the Championship Monday.
There's so many better things to talk about tonight. We got to stick with that.
Well, it's an exciting game, and they're going to get going shortly. That is not yet underway. Villanova, Michigan. I'll tell you one player I'm watching closely. I like him for two reasons. First, his name is Duncan Robinson. And, of course, the two greatest players in the history of the Spurs right. happen to be Duncan and Robinson, if you look at it that way.
Oh, gosh. I never thought about that.
He's a combo.
Yeah. Well, when I was in San Antonio, my Uber driver taking me to the stadium was telling me that he's kind of a fan favorite in San Antonio.
Really?
For that reason.
For that reason.
For that reason,
because he's named after Tim Duncan and David Robinson.
Okay. Well, he's a favorite of mine, and let me tell you why.
That's very cool.
He went to an elite basketball institution, Williams College, where the mascot are the Purple Cows.
There we go. Well, hey, you don't have many claims to fame, Williams, so we're going to let you have
this. This is about the only athletic claim to fame from Williams College. He played for Williams and then transferred to Michigan, and it's just not every day that a Williams College Purple Cow finds his way onto the big stage like he has this evening.
And he actually played very well.
He's great.
He was the spark in the second half.
He came off the bench. I mean, he was the catalyst that kind of got the ball rolling for him.
He's no ordinary purple cow.
He is not. No. They milked that cow in the second half. I saw that. 10-point deficit Michigan had. And with Robinson coming off, he turned the table.
So watch Duncan Robinson tonight.
Although he messed with my sister Jean.
I know. You're still sad about the sister Jean loss.
Sad. I really am. And on Easter weekend. What's wrong with these people?
All right, you're listening to SB Nation Radio. We'll be right back.